Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt joining us, as he does every Wednesday afternoon, in studio for a part two of our conversation about a book that we began discussing last week.
Yeah, Comeback Pitches, Remarkable Careers of Howard Emke and Jack Quinn by Lyle Spatz and Steve Steinberg. I'm efforting, as they say, with both of them to get them to come back and visit us. We'll remember that Steinberg wrote Urban Shocker, Silent Hero of Baseball's Golden Age, which we talked about. And together they wrote The Colonel and the Hug, partnership that transformed the New York Yankees. So these are baseball experts. They're two of the best in the business. And putting these two pitchers in the same book was a brilliant idea. And we talked about Howard Emke last time. He was a guy who was had really struggled with his health his whole career, pitched for a very long time. Quinn, on the other hand, was a very different kind of guy. He was born in what was then the Austro-Hungarian Empire in 1883. It's now part of Slovakia, and he's considered to be of Slovakian and Polish descent. His name was John Picus, when it was Anasize or Picus. People pronounce it differently. He was born Johannes Jan Picus, as they say, in 1883. He died in 1946. He pitched for 8 teams, which at the time was a record, and we remember there were many fewer teams in those days. In the American Federal and National League, he was one of the guys that jumped to the Federal League briefly. He played for some of the worst Red Sox teams of all time during the Frazee era, and he was a member of the three consecutive Philadelphia Athletics pennant winners from 29 to 31, and he won was part of a World Series winner in 29 and 30.
And pitched until he was 49 years old.
Actually,
in the
he was 50 when he made his final appearance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was 50 when he made his minor appearance. And he pitched until he started in 1909, won two games for the Highlanders, which will later become the Yankees. He last pitched on July 7th, 1933 for the Cincinnati Reds. Wow. So here's a guy that goes back to Hornsby and Cobb, obviously, right up through Ruth and Gehrig and other players of that era. He won 247, lost 218. He had 1,329 strikeouts, 56 saves. Of course, those had to be awarded retroactively because saves were not counted in the old days. And an ERA of 3.29.
Pitched in 756 games.
Yeah, 756 games. And he would start one day and relieve the next sometimes. Now, the thing about Quinn, he was raised in the coal regions of Pennsylvania near Mahanoy City, which is up in the northern Poconos in the anthracite region. And there are a lot of stories about his life that are probably apocryphal. His mother did die soon after the family arrived in 1884. 3 years later, his father remarried. but he spent his early years working as a swimmer and a blacksmith and a miner. And he played recreational ball. He was really good. Now, there's a debate whether this is apocryphal or not. Some say when he was 14 years old, he threw a foul ball back from the stands in Connellsville, Pennsylvania, that was such an incredible bullet to the catcher that the visiting manager offered him a contract. The others would say that no, when he was 18, he decided he wanted to be a ball player, and he basically left home, went out to Western Pennsylvania, and got signed to do that. I will trust Spatz and Steinberg on this over the more sort of George Washington chopping down the cherry tree thing of throwing the ball back from the stands. He spent 23 seasons in the major league, as I said, with 8 different teams. His professional longevity enabled him to achieve several age-related milestones. Oldest major league player to win a game until Jamie Moyer broke it in 2012. Oldest to lead his league in a major category, saves in 1932. Although saves were unknown in that area, they were retroactively awarded in 69. Oldest pitcher to start games in the World Series with the Athletics in 1929, and on opening day with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1931. Oldest to hit a home run in the majors at 46 until Julio Franco hit that one, which will still be the longest trot around the bases ever. Oldest person ever to play for the Cincinnati Reds. And at the time of his retirement, the 8 teams for which he played also constituted a record which has since been broken. He was the last major leaguer who had played in the 1900s decade to formally retire, not counting Charlie O'Leary, who made a comeback stint in 1934. He's one of 29 players to appear in major league games in 4 decades, and is the oldest player to play regularly, having pitched 87 1/3 innings 1932 at age 48 and 15 in 1933 at age 49 and 50. Now, Julio Franco and Phil Niekro were also regular players in that age, but they were younger. Here's the thing that I find astonishing. He didn't play, though he played for the A's and he played for the Yankees, longevity counts here. He played alongside 31 members of the Baseball Hall of Fame, collected two World Series rings. He was a spitballer, what they call a dry spitter. He didn't throw the big wet spitter. He collected two World Series rings in three tries. And as I pointed out, he was he played for some of the worst Red Sox teams that he and Emke played together. And then they were able to win later in Philadelphia. But some interesting things about him. He was a fitness nut long before that was part of baseball. And he was a very moderate imbiber. He didn't, though Emke was a teetotaler, at that time baseball players were known to be pretty hard drinkers. Mm. Lots of beer went down after games. He didn't have a lot of vices. He was married to the same woman for a very long time. We'll get into that in a minute. And like Emke, he had no children, which is interesting. Neither of them had any children. But he would hike and hunt in the off season, and was would always arrive at spring training in better shape than everybody else, and was very proud of that. It was something that he did, and he said that's why his arm was always good. He had very few periods of arm trouble, but it would be amazing at age 20, 21, you know, things weren't going well. They tell him it was all done. They tell him he was done in his 30s. They told him he was done in his early 40s. And he made a comment, much like Tom Brady, when Brady said he thought he could play till he was 45. Quinn said, I don't see why I couldn't play till I was 50. I take care of myself. And he also said, the guys that will burn out are the guys that throw nothing but heat.
Mm.
And he said, I've always relied on control. If you can get the ball where you want to get it, and you can change speeds, doesn't matter who you're hitting. He said, never leave a fastball out over the plate to Ruth. Never, but throw him. He said, throw him a change of pace down low, and he can't hit it. So he talked about the science of pitching well before other people did. He seemed to not, like Emke, have enemies. He didn't get into squabbles with people. Was never accused of being much of a headhunter. But tragically, in 1940, 7 years after he'd retired, and he played some minor league baseball in his 50s, and he tried to get into baseball managing. His wife, Georgiana Jean, to whom he was very close, she would see all of his games. Lived in Chicago. She would travel on the road when the team went on the road. Was at a family picnic, and she saw it was in Illinois. She ran after the children as an ice cream truck drew near. She tripped on a sprinkler and fell over a park bench. Compound fracture of her leg, and 2 days later was dead from gangrene. He never recovered. In fact, he died at 62 from cirrhosis of the liver. He became, just drank consistently. He could come back against all of the other kinds of things that he fought against. Teams that let him go, teams that didn't believe in him, managers that didn't really understand him. If you read this book, one of the things that I think anyone will take away is Connie Mack was a brilliant manager. The years his teams didn't do well, he didn't have players. He didn't have the money for the players. When he had players, he won. And with Quinn and Emke, he really knew how to get the most out of his pitchers. And I don't mean by manipulation or psychological warfare or anything. Well, a little bit with Emke sometimes. But he knew when they were right for the job, and he believed in these guys, and he wanted them both from the Red Sox. And everybody's going, they're the only thing the Red Sox have. And he was willing to trade good players to get them. Though with Harry Frazee, all he had to do was give him $25 and a bag of baseballs, and you could get anybody you wanted. I think what makes this such a great book and such a great idea is these are two completely different men who played essentially in the same era, who were both from the Northeast. Silver Creek, New York, south of Buffalo, is not all that far from Mahanoy, Pennsylvania, which, for people who don't know where it is, it's a little south of both Wilkes-Barre and Hazleton, probably a little closer to Hazleton, up in the Pennsylvania mountains. They both were married to the same woman for a long time. They didn't have any neither of them had a hint of scandal with them during baseball at a time when there was a lot of scandal in baseball. And they've been, in many ways, been forgotten in the record books, and they both still to this day, you know, if you took the top five rankings in certain places, they're all there, both of them.
Mm. One year, he pitched 342 innings, gave up 335 hits.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and the thing is, what's interesting about the two of them, MP threw from everywhere, underhand, sidearm, overhand, alike. Quinn was basically an overhand pitcher. And, you know, when we look around now and we see how many people have had Tommy John surgery, how many people that throw cheese don't last very long, don't have long career. I mean, think about who were the last real submariners? Tuculvey, Quisenberry.
I remember Ted Abernathy back in the early 70s.
Abernathy, yeah. I mean, really, nowadays, it's all this, the arm angle, right?
Mm.
And launch angle and arm angle become. These guys threw from every, well, Quinn didn't so much. Emke threw from every direction. But they did this, they studied pitchers and they didn't have, and batters. They didn't have video. They had little notebooks and they had the train to talk about it. You know, and they spent more, the team spent more time together. You get an airplane, you fly to a city, you go to a hotel. If you've got to take an overnight train, you're with your team a lot longer. And so Quinn would talk later in life, he'd talk about the pitchers. How do you get this hitter out? Where do you throw this guy? He didn't seem to care that he was telling them that. But he died. It was a real tragic death. He's a real American immigrant story, the kind of story that, you know, gets lost sometimes. I mean, this guy comes over from what's now Slovakia and has no idea about baseball, sees some people playing it and says, I want to do that.
That's awesome. A book is called Comeback Pitchers.
The Remarkable Careers of Howard Emke and Jack Quinn, Lyle Spatz and Steve Steinberg, University of Nebraska Press. And I have a call out to both of them. If we don't have them on next week, and I don't think we will, we'll talk about a new book called Culture on Two Wheels, another series of essays on bicycling and how much cycling is changing our society.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, Bruce.